Cool. That was it. We're here. I sound great. How about you?
Hi, guys.
Oh, man. You got the little sniff sniffs?
Welcome to another Scrutineers. This is Eeyore and Strong Sad over here.
And there's a cloud over our heads.
We're both feeling a little under the weather, but we're committed to giving you guys the best scrutiny we can every week.
There's really nothing that would stop us.
No, nothing at all. We are going to keep it a little light, though.
I always keep it light. I mean,
keep it light, keep it fluffy. The scrutineers are like your favorite omelet.
It's like a crisp fall day, you know? Every time you hear our voice, it's like that, the cool side of the pillow on a hot summer night.
That's a fact, Jack. Well, I mean, I'm looking at the docket here.
There's a lot going on, but
we're going to focus on the important things today,
exactly.
Like video games and Netflix, because that's kind of all we feel like doing tonight.
What else is the point of life?
I've heard there's some politics going on, but I don't know. I stopped paying it last week during Fangate.
Just promise us you'll watch The Daily Show and we'll pick up, you know, we'll butt in if anything really important happens.
Well, did you see that? Yeah, exactly. You can rely on Jon Stewart. He's doing a pretty good job.
We got his back, though. Yeah.
Right? Catching any ground balls that go between his legs. We're there to back him up.
Yeah, we're like the outfield.
There we go. They always stuck me in the outfield because I could do the least damage there in Little League.
Yeah, it's weird how it becomes like when you get, it's one of those positions where you just stick the bad kids, and then all of a sudden in high school it becomes like the most important position.
Right, because at a certain point the kids get strong enough to hit the ball to the outfield.
Right, essentially you're putting them out of bounds until like sixth grade. But
and then holy crap, it becomes useful.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, hold on. You mentioned that thing about a second ago. It was going to be relevant, not to something we had planned to talk about, but to something I was... God, this is boring radio if I just search my own memory for a while.
No, I find it...
It's riveting.
It's attractive, actually.
If anything.
Physically, you look good while doing this. Unfortunately, that doesn't
come
through on a podcast.
If you could see me tugging my chin. No, this is not simulcast anywhere. It was going to be about the coverage of news. Yes, The Daily Show. The fact that a new... I saw it on Pew's Twitter feed, like Pew Research people. But
that's legitimate.
Yeah, but they might have been... So, right, it's a good source, but I don't know if they came out with this study or if they have the statistics from someone else. But they're statistics people.
Their endorsement means something to me.
Likewise. And it's just on me for not having the important facts in front of me. It was just this thing in general, we all know it already, that people are more likely to like stick within their preconceived points of view when seeking out news.
Fair enough.
And it was ranking different news sources compared with how people identify politically. And like, not just Republican or Democrat, but on a 5-point scale from I'm heavy conservative to heavy liberal with medium in between points, you know? So there were varying shades of gray and factors. And the only time The Daily Show showed up on the final graph was like on the very far left. And it was just like, oh, well, I mean, that makes sense. People need to get the joke. You know, people want to stay within the comfy thoughts and echo chambers that they've cultivated for themselves.
Right. But I mean, again, and I know we said we didn't want to get into politics today, so let's not. But, you know, you got to think about.
No, well, this is sticking firmly in the media
exactly.
side of
and
the discussion.
But my point was going to be, think about who Jon Stewart competes with at his time slot. He, you know, competes with the most popular political TV show, which is Bill O'Reilly, you know, which is replayed at 11 o'clock every night.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I think that part of it is just the nature of him being on at the same time when people have the opportunity to watch other shows. And, you know, some people that might consider watching Jon Stewart, you know, probably turn to Bill O'Reilly or turn to whatever else is on at that time. And it's just sort of the nature of having those opportunities. So, I mean, obviously you can't force anyone to watch everything. And because of that, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I used to just check out Drudge just to see what he was on about.
Same.
But even now, like, I haven't done that in months. Like, I can't keep up with that. Because, like, at a certain point, I don't know. I also don't keep up with Huffington Post anymore because sometimes they're a little hard to listen to.
I agree. I think that's, like, one of the worst clickbait sources around, in my opinion, especially since they merged with AOL. I think that there's a lot of good reporting that goes on there.
I guess they've become aggregators and bloggers more than journalists, right?
So, and what the issue really is that there's a lot of good reporting that goes on there that gets sort of overwhelmed by a lot of that kind of sort of BuzzFeed clickbait stuff.
I also feel like sometimes, and not just Huffington Post, but like this whole group that would include Huffington Post and Gawker Media and all
media
of their tendrils, and BuzzFeed,
Vox,
like this small group, a lot of them, well, I don't know so much about Vox and those, but
Vox,
like specifically...
Yeah. I guess I shouldn't have even thrown it into the equation because it hasn't really worked yet. But anyway, go on.
No, it's just that they lean so far heavily left that they sound like assholes and parodies of themselves that like sometimes it's just...
Which was not what it set out to be. It set out to be a more data-driven form of journalistic... Of political journalism.
Yeah. No, it's just like sometimes the opinions you read on Huffington Post are just like... Even I find them tiresome, you know, and I consider myself a pretty progressive with it guy.
Yeah, and I think that that becomes an issue with a lot of different media sources.
I consider myself. I don't.
I, being a suave, sophisticated progressive.
Right.
You know.
Me, having not publicly offended any transsexuals by calling them transgender to their faces, that makes me progressive and with it.
You're great. You're just.
I'm going to pat myself on the back. See, even then, a moment ago, I didn't know which was right and which was wrong, transsexual and transgender. I'm sure I pissed someone off.
But you meant well.
Well, yeah, and I guess that counts for something, somewhere. But the road to hell is paved with good intentions, isn't it?
Yeah, but a man without a moral code is barely a man.
Hear, hear.
Anyway.
Well, I don't know. Real quick, there was this like fun little news story that I found on Reddit that I wanted to bring to the world's attention in case Reddit wasn't a big enough mouthpiece for this article. We were just bashing Gawker Media, and this comes from one of their sites,
io9. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of good that Gawker's done. They've made.
Well, I mean,
I don't mean to paint them sort of broadly as a.
Well, they want to be a gossip site. They literally say we are gossip. So of course they're inflammatory. This is from like a website about tech and video games, so it's gonna have a totally different feel, which is why I have no problem talking about it. Not that, I mean, I'm sure if there were an interesting story next week that came from Gawker, I'd talk about it too. Because sometimes a source is a source. I'm onto your shit. That's all I'm saying. If you guys are listening, hey, I get what you're doing.
He picks up what you put down.
No, this whole thing, I don't know. You play video games. Do they help you solve problems? Have you ever, like, done something? Or as, let me put it this way. Have you ever used skills built in a video game to like help you at work?
Absolutely.
Or at school,
absolutely.
Maybe?
And I think that the relationship between sort of the skills I've developed on the digital level and the skills that I've developed, and again, you know, part of these skills are intangible, part of these skills are the ability to think about problems and analyze problems and come up with solutions and sort of, you know, sort of use either trial and error or different modes of approaching a problem.
Right. Use the tools available to you. Because, like, that's what any game is. You get a scenario and you have a toolkit, and can you remember that you have the hammer to break this block, right? I don't know.
I think that sort of for a long time, video games were sort of stuck under the stigma where people associated them with laziness and stupid people or lack of intelligence, and they didn't really attribute some of those problem solving skills with some of the skills that sort of are necessary for some of today's best and most important jobs.
Right. Well, this article from io9, as I said, is about research from Florida State University, and there's this company, this like brain training software called Lumosity.
Yeah, Lumosity. I think I've seen the commercials. It's an app you can download. You pay a certain fee per month, and they track your progress, and they basically quantify all of your scores as to sort of brain improvement of brain power. And
so is it a video game? Have you used it?
They're video game-like exercises.
Okay.
So,
That's cool.
It'll be word games. It'll be memory games. It'll almost on the level of like things you did on Mario Party.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, not as fun, not as sort of...
Hopefully without burning the palm of your hand raw, rotating the joystick. Remember
absolutely.
Those, that, I don't know how, like, clearly Nintendo made the hardware and the software for Mario Party, that first one on Nintendo 64, right? So we were all destroying our controllers and our palms were raw from, like,
the advocates for carpal tunnel syndrome just had no influence on the design of that game because there are kids who are going to literally be crippled in, like, a few years, like by the time they're 60,
people started actually wearing gloves because some of those mini games force you to rotate the stick so fast that
you get blisters, you wear it on your fingers. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I still play Mario Party every once in a while, and
that was actually something they fixed in subsequent sequels to the game.
Yep, that was something that didn't make it to Mario Party 3, 4, and 5. Thank God.
Thank Miyazaki.
Yeah.
No, he's Spirited Away and all those. Miyamoto, he's Nintendo, right?
That's right.
Anyway, so Lumosity, right. Florida State, they had people play 8 hours of Lumosity and 8 hours of Portal 2, which is from Valve, the people.
Explain Portal 2 to me in like 3 sentences, because I've never played it.
Oh, that's really fun. Great. It's really easy. It is a first-person puzzle game. So you use, like, okay, you know how in like a Call of Duty or Halo game, it's called a first-person shooter because the camera is your point of view and you have a gun in your hands and you shoot shit? You're familiar with the concept, of course. So this uses the same mechanics, but it's not, you also have a gun, but you're not using it to shoot people. You're using it to solve puzzles. And the gun shoots portals into walls, and you have to get to the end of a maze from point A to point B using this portal gun. So you shoot the entrance and the exit, and then you walk through it, and you advance through mazes that way.
Cool.
Really cool. Really fun. And then, as the game goes on, they teach you different tools and show you different situations. And it's really just because it's a well-designed game where things progress incrementally, and you don't even realize the skills you're learning and building by solving these puzzles.
So everything you just said to me sounds like there's sort of, it seems like the proper forum for someone to develop problem-solving skills, to develop some of the things that Lumosity says it's going to develop. So that's interesting to me, just because sort of, you know, the game itself is just structured in such a simple and sort of clear way that it forces your mind to think constructively and again, develop some of those skills that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, I don't know. I guess my point is, you know, we talk about sort of what's the best way for people to learn? What are the best way for students to learn? How should we sort of improve and structure our, you know, whether it's you're a teacher, whether you're someone who's, you know, trying to make a commercial on TV, you want someone to sort of comprehend and consume the information in the best way possible. And what we're seeing here is that video games sort of develop those skills in a way that people sort of didn't talk about before and didn't really think.
It's got to be a well-made game, yeah. But I don't know. I would like to see more of this kind of gamification and validation of games and shit.
Right. And just sort of a general change in the perception of what video games are. I mean, people think of them as sort of a waste of time. And by people, I mean sort of the crotchety old parent who dismisses, you know, her kid. I don't know why I'm...
Well, who do you, okay, who do you think... Just as easily. Who do you think is a typical gamer? When I say someone who plays video games, what conjures in your brain?
I think there's...
Forgetting the whole fucking horrible Gamergate thing.
Right. We're just keeping it...
Or simple. No, wait. Let's keep them in because they're part of the stereotype. When you...
Again, let's not get let's not sort of get caught up in that sort of small minority of people. I think you gotta... If we're gonna talk about gamers or gaming, you gotta look a little bit broader. And again, neither of us have the facts to sort of back this up. But I think that if you think about the casual gamer, you know, the person who's playing maybe sports games in their... You know, in a group setting, or Mario Party, or sort of that social gamer who likes to play with friends and maybe doesn't play by themselves.
Nah, man, you're wrong. That's not, dude. When you look at all games and video games, most people playing games are middle-aged women playing iOS games.
Right.
That is what the gamer is now.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. But
so I mean, people don't really understand what's out there and who's playing what. So the idea that Portal 2, just because it's a well-designed puzzle game, is actually more beneficial to your neuroplasticity than Lumosity, which is what they ended up discovering through this study, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just so cool to me that, like, it's just this small subset of these, like, neck-bearded, misogynistic people threatening each other online, you know, and, like, getting really worked up over frame rates. Like, that's not most people playing games. Like, it's not what most games are, obviously, because
right.
Some of the games are Portal 2, which expand your brain, you know? So it's not even what most games are, and it's certainly not who's playing them. So I don't know. That was just a little food for everyone's brain.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, it definitely makes you think about, especially the nature.
I mean, yeah, and if you want brain food, definitely go play Portal, because Portal 2's It's an unreal game.
Exactly. And I think that you sort of look at it from that perspective. If you think, oh, I'm person X, maybe I'm that middle-aged woman, and I don't realize it, but what I'm thinking in my head is I want to, you know, I want to increase my neuroplasticity.
Right, right.
You might think I might be open to the idea of playing a video game like Portal as opposed to sort of buying Lumosity or you know, doing something like that where there's, you know, this, it's not like you need to sort of take this sort of medicinal or very sort of structured route where you really, you know, now video games.
Yeah, it's like a kid. You don't even think of it as helping yourself or education. It's just right. playing a game and making yourself better. Mm-hmm. I mean, now that BioShock is available in the iTunes App Store, I mean, it would be surprising, but I wonder if there are any middle-aged women playing
stumbling upon BioShock,
you know? That would be really cool because, like, and all of these games, it really is just, here's a set of rules. We're throwing you in this environment, but the environment is just the characters move based on a set of rules. The enemies jump around the screen based on whatever the little formula is, you know?
Right.
So it's like, here's a set of rules, and you, like I said, you have tools to work within it, and can you solve the problem? I don't know.
It's interesting because even...
It's actually one of the only differences as a storytelling medium from games to movies.
Right.
Is that a movie you can just sit and watch and a game will lock you out. If you are sucky at solving the puzzles and you can't play the game, you can't finish the story.
Right. And that's why it's intimidating to people who don't have that general comfort with video games. I think that so often, you know, you try and say... Growing up, I would talk to my dad and say, oh, this video game is so cool. And he would almost dismiss it no matter what. It would be essentially the same story as the book he's reading, except it just doesn't translate because there's no way for him to access it, and it's just not real to him. And I think that's something that's really different for us, because for us, the story on a video game can be just as compelling and interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, if it's done well.
Yeah, and on top of that, we're seeing now that there's, you know, real benefits, you know, mentally and sort of psychologically.
For sure.
No, I don't know. Absolutely.
Right on. So switching gears entirely.
Yeah, and a little bit, on previous podcasts, we've talked about one of my least favorite actors. A guy, anybody, I think, who between the ages of 20 to 30 has really, you know, doesn't grow up without having some seminal moment that he's a part of. And, you know, he's a guy who sort of hasn't aged well, in my opinion. I don't know about what you're thinking.
You're talking about Chevy Chase, of course.
Yes, Chevy Chase of Caddyshack fame.
Part of everyone's childhood.
No, the guy we're talking about is Adam Sandler.
The water boy, the famous...
Bobby Boucher.
the inflictor of Rob Schneider.
And that's the thing. Like, I can name some of the characters he's played in some of his shittier movies. Like, this is a guy who, you know, he had fanboys across the board...
I still think, like, the one where he goes to school and is a little kid is a funny movie. Billy Madison.
Oh.
I mean, it makes me chuckle.
Billy Madison. It Happy Gilmore. Place. I mean, those are the two classics. Big Daddy.
But again, I wonder how much I'm clouded by nostalgia.
Right. We saw him at his best, and I think now we're sort of...
At his best at a time when we were poised to hear it.
Right.
Like, a 14-year-old who gets his hands on They're All Gonna Laugh at You, one of his albums, mm-hmm. you know? That's perfect age to hear, like... The beating of a Pokemon.
Yeah.
And you remember those audio sketches.
And if you think about his style of humor, it's perfect for that. You know, it goes back to your point. I mean, he's crude.
It's crude reference humor. He's like a, you know, Seth MacFarlane owes a lot to Adam Sandler.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that his ability, especially, you know, his songs, he's very musical.
It's true.
He often, you know, would just sort of come up with a little ditty that was, like, friggin' hilarious. I mean, the
Lunch Lady Land,
the Hanukkah song, Lunch Lady.
Yep.
In a couple weeks, we'll hear the Turkey song. I mean, these are just the ones. These are just the ones that are marketable and easy for them to put on the radio. There's all kinds of other ones that were tied to skits. You know, like,
it's true.
I mean, I think that, you know, no matter where you look at what he's done, he was funny for so long that it makes sense that he's still got such a big name. But, you know, it gets to a point where.
But yeah,
too much of a good thing is still too much of a good thing. I mean, it's still too much.
And especially when it becomes a bad, toxic thing.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what's something he's done recently that you just loathe? How about Chuck and Larry?
Yeah, well, there was that.
That was pretty bad.
Grown-ups 2.
Now, have you seen these?
No.
Excuse me.
Let me correct that. Grown-ups 2 was on the bus I was on going from Boston to New York. So I could see it.
It was an in-road movie?
Yeah. It wasn't. Those now? It was. It was an in-road movie.
I guess I don't travel by bus or by coach very often.
It's cheaper. I'll give it that. But
man, I would so much rather drive myself than take my life into the hands of a Fung Wah bus driver. Those Boston to New York, Chinatown to Chinatown buses.
It's a dangerous experience. I've never done it, but I've heard. My
did it exactly once in college.
Yeah,
it was dangerous. The company is now shut down because most of the drivers don't. Yeah, they don't have licenses much of the time.
but anyway, I watched Grown Ups 2 on the bus, and it was hard for me to pay attention. I mean, I didn't want to watch it.
Right. Well, you were literally a captive audience at that point.
Yeah, but I was, again, a captive audience. But you constantly were looking at the screen, and it was like a deer shitting on the bed and running around the house and then knocking over. It was just stupid slapstick humor that wasn't funny, that was just designed to make like a 3-year-old to a 7-year-old laugh. I mean, it wasn't appealing to me, and it wasn't the guy that I sort of, I don't want to say fell in love with, but it wasn't sort of the it wasn't the experience and the style of humor, and it wasn't smart enough for me.
Said in interviews at this point that he literally picks scripts or writes scripts so he can go on vacation. Like the movie he made in Africa was so he could bring his family to Africa,
right.
And like that's just as much,
and not just his family, starving actor friends,
the ones that he keeps in work because they're old bros,
right?
Which is great to have an entourage.
Yeah, like, I don't hate it. I mean, if I was his friend, I'd want to.
Inflicting all these movies on us and just dumbing us down.
Yeah.
Even if you don't watch it, you're part of a culture that has the deer shitting on the child or whatever in it now.
Right. And
how was that for a little Bill Cosby? The deer shits on the child.
Pudding. Deer pop. But did you see Hannibal Buress called him a racist?
I did. That's
or a rapist, not a racist.
Rapist, yeah. No, that's, I mean, why I guess Cosby was top of mind.
Yeah.
Looks
like it's gonna get messy. I mean,
it was already messy the first time rolled around. I mean, from what it sounds like, Cosby's pretty guilty.
Yeah.
All this shit was settled out of court, very hush hush. But that's not what we came here to talk about.
Exactly. Anyway, so back to my experience with Adam Sandler, and you know, it's to the point where he's making so much money that he doesn't have to care about the quality of his work, and it's kind of as simple as that. I mean,
which is a major problem for Netflix.
In 2013, he made $140 million because he produces all of his movies. He doesn't have to give off cuts to all these other sort of production people. He ends up raking it in for these mediocre, crappy sort of,
yeah,
you know,
phoned in.
Like
schlocky,
lame D-minus movies that he seems to sort of feel like he can continue to make while there's this whole...
Well, he keeps getting rewarded for it.
Right. While there's this whole block of people, and these are people I sort of identify with this, that sort of long for the good old days when he was sort of doing the things that I found funny and being...
Yeah, and that's why it's sad, and that's why it's not like, well, if you don't like his movies, don't watch them. Like, we're not going to watch them because we don't want to support this shit. But also, like, it's just sad to see him not be what he was. And that's why I'm worried about Netflix. Because
right.
He just signed a 4-movie deal with them. And they keep putting out shit. They keep putting out shit. But they keep putting out stuff that, like, is sight unseen. You just see it when they show it to you. And, like, I don't know. BoJack Horseman is mostly good, but it's hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
And on a network, it would not have gotten a full season, probably.
Right.
So they kind of just unload this on you. And if you like it, then it's good. And if it's Hemlock Grove, then you ignore it.
And what's interesting about Netflix's approach is it's like data driven. They have this huge pool of people who are watching their movies and watching their TV shows, and they keep tabs of it all, so they know demographic
vast amounts of data.
Like,
because they know who's watching, and then they also know what they're watching.
Right.
They know years movies they were made, what genres, what actors, and that's why they've literally said that, like, House of Cards, we pieced together because what people like David Fincher
and they
people
like politics and they had reasons to know why every aspect of that show would be successful.
It is Fincher, right? I didn't make that up.
I don't know if he did the whole thing.
He must have.
It might have been David. Was it Lynch?
Pilot. No,
it wasn't David Lynch.
No, but I mean, it's the whole. I don't know. There's obviously a reason that the main character plays Xbox and you're watching Netflix on your Xbox. Like, that's not a mistake. They have the data in front of them. That's
right.
That's what we're saying.
But it gets to a point where, you know, again, you talk about how they dump the shows on you, where you're sort of you're getting all this content thrust at you. Again, where does sort of you, where do you draw the line? Where do you say this is too much of, you know, slapstick comedy about, you know, with middle-aged buddies going on a road trip, and Netflix has 15 movies that they can have, but you know what? I only want to watch this one movie, or I only want to watch Tommy Boy. I don't want to watch these 20 other shitty.
Well, I guess it's like vote with your wallet at the movie theater, and if you're on Netflix, then vote with your hit your page hits. You know,
right.
If you don't want to watch the shitty Adam Sandler movies, I guess the only way to make that known to Netflix is by not watching it or giving it a piss poor rating after you do watch it.
But what's interesting is Netflix has sort of put all their ducks in that sort of Adam Sandler basket. That is what's interesting to me because of the way his movies have been received recently, and the way
because all the reviews are out there. Like, you've seen the movie reviews. You use Rotten Tomatoes, don't you? You know what they're saying on there.
The perception of Adam Sandler is, I mean, people don't think he's making good movies anymore. It's just, oh, Adam Sandler coming out with another.
Although I bet he has a higher approval rating than Congress.
Absolutely,
like, for sure.
Oh,
probably,
yeah,
probably higher than Tyler Perry too.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, Congress is like, I feel like there's, Ebola probably has a higher rating than Congress.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, at least there's a cure. At least you know where to go if you're stuck with Ebola. Anyway, wash your hands, everyone.
Yeah.
With soap and then Purell after.
Stop playing with your feces, for starters.
Mm-hmm. No monkey sex. I hope.
That's what got us into this. So, is there, like, oh, we've got a caller in the studio. First time caller, long time listener. That's handled. Nothing important.
No, we've settled the matter. Things are going to be okay.
Right on. We'll fire the intern that let that call through. We've got several call screeners.
Absolutely. But anyway, feel free to call in next week at 1-800-MIX-A-LOT and shake that nasty thing.
Baby got back. So is there, like, any reason Netflix has made this announcement, like, now?
Yeah, I mean, think about where the sort of cable TV world is. You have so many people sort of making this decision where they're like, I don't know if I want to shell out that money anymore. I mean, do you have cable right now? What's your cable
my
setup?
Here's my peculiar situation. It actually requires some explaining because I have cable from one company and internet from another,
mm-hmm.
and phone from the internet people. So when I moved into the city, I asked them, I got Verizon for my internet, and I was like, can I get TV with you guys? And they were like, well, no, we use DirecTV in the city, but for sure we can install it in your place. That's fine. And of course they come by and DirecTV can't install in my place. My place isn't allowed to have them, and I kind of didn't want them anyway. And then I'm like, all right, Verizon, well, screw you guys. I guess I'll just have your internet, and I'll take my cable somewhere else. So I have Time Warner for cable, Verizon for internet. It's a long, boring story.
Interesting.
But Time Warner is shitty cable, and
sorry,
I rarely
that
use
split
it.
Down the middle. But go on.
Thank you. My default option, I turn on my Xbox for video before I turn on my TV because Time Warner is so shitty to use.
Mm-hmm.
It's a clunky interface, and I hate using it. And the Xbox is so much easier, and there's such a vast array of content on there because I get my Netflix here and stolen Hulu over here and HBO over here. And once HBO goes, they sever themselves from cable.
Which they just announced that they will be as of next January.
Oh, boy. Guys, huge announcement. You heard it here first on the Scrutineers. Max, can you repeat that for us for the listeners at home?
You don't need cable to get HBO. No, no more streaming your parents' HBO. This is what people will be asking for Christmas in December because it's better than a stocking stuffer because it's going to get you friggin' Girls and Thrones and Silicon
Valley.
That's
true. You will have courtesans and a throne room all to yourself just by having HBO.
Exactly. So that being said, I mean, this is big fucking news. And
like you said, January, when HBO severs itself from cable, that's it. If I only need an internet connection, then out goes the Time Warner. I'm just a Verizon fanboy, and that's all I need because the only thing people use cable for at that point is live sports.
And you got to think that Time Warner and Verizon they know that. You know what I mean?
Well, Time Warner owns HBO, so they're going to make money no matter what.
Okay.
But I just don't want to support their shitty cable.
Right.
And I'm sure everyone's going to jump off of Comcast Because Comcast is the worst of the three.
Well, but that being said, I wonder what how this is going to affect those cable options, because it seems like they only move and they only tend to improve and up their sort of offerings is when they're really threatened. They don't sort of strive to create and constantly innovate on their experience for their customers. They're
well,
the
they
type
did
of companies.
Deliberately the opposite. They right. said, hey, let's break apart the country so we don't have to innovate.
Right. Let's make this really easy on ourselves.
Let's stop competing. So they stopped competing.
And now they're being forced to at least think along those lines and say, is it in our best interest to let all these customers just walk out the door?
The ideal situation would be this move by HBO pressures them into offering channels a la carte, which is what everyone wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Could you see that? I could see that being the next move. If they take a look at the numbers and see that not having HBO is really fucking them,
mm-hmm.
then we could get what we want.
And I think that that would be in their best interest, because then all of a sudden you have...
Although I'll have what I want in January anyway.
Right. Well, that's you, though. But I mean, I think that if you could sort of market around that idea as opposed to sort of saying, oh, pay me $50 a month and blindly get, like, you know, 70% of these channels and
most
waste
of which you don't want.
Exactly. And it's, you know, it's one thing to us. I think that that argument translates to sort of our parents and people, you know, and our grandparents. I think that if you could present it to them in the way where you just say, what channels do you watch? Okay, you're only going to pay for those channels. I think that you'd have a much different perception and a much different sort of approach to the idea of watching TV and paying for cable than you do now, where you have 1,000 channels. And again, I'm not trying to sound like a crotchety old man. I'm just
no, dude, we are crotchety old men now. We're scrutinizing.
Exactly.
We're here to speak truth to power and bitch and moan about shit that's wrong.
We're a young Statler and Waldorf, if you will.
I'll allow it.
Just sitting up in the
a young Statler and Waldorf. You know what's the best part about this show?
It's almost over. Anyway. Anyway, folks.
A little old school vaudeville right at you, straight to your ear holes.
Straight up in your ass. Anyway,
So
when was the last time you bought a CD?
Oh, man, it's been a minute. I can tell you I listened to albums all the time. I listen to full-length records.
On vinyl, like you play the discs.
Yeah, I spin some wax, but no, I'm saying like... I listen to full-length albums. Like, just today, I heard the debut album from Handjob Academy on Spotify, and I was able to listen to it all the way through. Yeah, fun name. Great band. I feel like they're a really fun bunch of girls, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, with that name, how could they not be?
I feel like they've probably learned a lot about handjobs.
And they're imparting their knowledge on others. It sounds like they're doing the Lord's work.
Do your thing, girl.
They're a trio of rappers from Brooklyn, and their debut came out in August. And they're mad funny, and they can rap real well. They came to my attention from a cover of Soul Coughing's Super Bon Bon, that great 90s hit that we all know and love and totally remember.
That classic.
Anyway, so yeah, I haven't bought a CD in ages because I've been streaming all my shit from Spotify or Spotify.
Spotify.
Spotify and Newt Flukes have been disrupting all kinds of industries, haven't they?
It's, you know, the way things are going. It's
the way
just,
of the internet.
Just ever since Blockbuster.
Since they tanked.
But you're right. I mean, people these days, and it's by people, I mean...
Everyone.
People our age, people 25 to 30, people who are tech savvy.
The demographic so coveted by most advertisers.
Exactly.
The important people.
The money makers, if you will. you know, we don't go to...
The underside.
We don't go to the Virgin stores. We don't go to Sam Goody or...
Mostly because they don't exist.
I know, I'm saying. These are funny names
to us. We
don't
even go to the iTunes store.
Yeah.
We go to Pandora and Spotify.
In fact, we delete shit that iTunes store gives us for free because they just stuff U2 down our throats now.
You see Bono apologized?
I did.
In his apology, he was like, well, we thought no one would hear the record if we didn't give it to them. And then I'm like, maybe... Then it has to be better.
Yeah.
So people would go seek it out
if
on their
you want
own.
People. There's some
like every other album ever made.
There's some flawed logic. Your purpose is to make music that people want to hear, but you thought that no one wanted to hear your music. So why are you? What?
Well, because Apple gave us money, so that's the end of it. So that's the thing is that we need these gimmicks. So we got to shake up the industry, but they don't work.
Right.
Because no one's buying albums.
And when it's this sort of industry that relies on sort of the physical piece, and now it's changed into getting rid of that Now people don't buy the physical CD. They just buy the songs, the digital music. You know, there's a...
Yeah, we are single-driven.
Yep.
And we also like to steal and stream and not purchase.
Right.
So... what does that mean? That means there are no platinum records this year.
Right. And now people aren't going to the store. And, you know, when Taylor Swift or Maroon 5, you know, I'm thinking of sort of the biggest, most mainstream artist drops a new album. It doesn't sell. Is platinum 1 million copies? 10 million copies?
I think platinum is 1 million because...
Because people used to go double platinum. I remember I remember watching MTV Cribs, and you'd go into their studio, and you would just see every single that their artist would ever have, and it would be either gold or platinum or, you know, it was a good sort of rundown of their greatest hits.
I think the two albums closest to going platinum this year, both of them, I don't think either of them have sold more than 800,000 copies, and I think both of them came out last year. I'm talking about Lorde's Pure Heroin and Beyoncé's self-titled. So like,
and we're talking about the biggest international superstars in the world right now. Right,
and they're the biggest albums of 2014, and they came out in 2013. Like, so clearly, the music audience is a segmented audience now,
and it's a segmented audience that wants to consume their music in a very specific way. They want it on their iPhone.
So you're an executive producer. What do you do? Do you shit your pants or jump out of the window?
Well, I guess your first thought is, I want to, you know what I mean. I'm not going to jump out the window. I'm not going to shit my pants. I'm going to try and do something. So I think that the subscription based model makes a lot of sense. And I think that Spotify has been able to sort of pave the way. And unfortunately, iTunes and some of these other companies might fall by the wayside.
I just had a thought. I think I just saved the music industry.
Dump, da dump, 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 dump. Burr, burr, NBC breaking news.
I thought you were doing the like Star Wars LucasArts THX. The audience.
I didn't really know where I was going to go. Deaf. I was that too. Anyway, let's save the music industry.
So, it just occurred to me. Okay, we were talking about Portal. Portal is made by a company called Valve. Valve makes Half-Life and a bunch of other games, and they release them as well as every other game ever made on a platform called Steam. Valve releases Steam. That's pretty clever. So they are a video game publisher that makes games and gets money by selling other people's games through this little ecosystem they've made that looks a lot like Spotify. I'm thinking if you're like a huge record label like EMI or Warner, mm-hmm. you should make your own Spotify the same way that CBS is trying to have a Hulu of just CBS. You know what I mean?
Or
they're trying to do a Netflix of just CBS shows. So it's going to be about brand loyalty to like labels and right. networks like that.
But then it would involve a lot of branding for those labels to really, like, again, my first thought was Def Jam. Def Jam wouldn't have to do a lot of branding because you could just have their whole catalog, all 30 years, everything.
Right. Well, you would have to do the branding by relating it to your artist. Warner Brothers would lean heavy on like, well, they just signed Mac Miller, and they'd lean heavy on their Flaming Lips back catalog.
Right.
Like that.
But they would have those very specific artists that they would have to emphasize, and be like, oh, you'd have to go here for X and here for Y, this, you know. So it would just be an interesting sort of way for all the breakdown.
Yeah, but I bet, don't you think it's too late for that? Because I'm sure they already sold all these rights to be able to get streamed on all these other services.
Yeah, and honestly, that's
their business, is selling rights to shit someone else made.
They didn't have that tech background. I mean,
yeah. Do we even need the middleman anymore?
I mean, not
we're
really.
We're doing it. We're not musicians, but we're making content, just putting it out ourselves.
And I think that that's kind of the problem that these record companies are facing, is they're trying to find a way to be valuable in this process.
We don't need them.
We don't really need them.
Hear that? We're going to rebuff the big names before they can even come at us.
Rebuff and disrupt. That's what the scrutineers do. Print that shit.
Blammo, right? You can take that to the bank.
And then smoke we'll it. Take that to the bank and smoke it.
There you go. And then we'll be mixing metaphors straight into next week.
Oh, yeah.
Blast off. Well, touchdown
and blast off with the scrutineers.
Later, folks.